Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes.
Conversation of conservatism. For those of you that have come from Charlotte Dively's show, Prophetic Art Class, I hope you have enjoyed it. If you have not come from her show and you enjoy Christian art, you can find her show at https://apps.facebook.com/newnow. Or you can see it here in the chat. Okay, posted there in the chat for you. And the show is from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, tonight, we will have a special guest. He has a author. He has authored a book called The Hidden Fourth Branch. Without stealing Mr. Mordecai's thunder, his book and his website cover a myriad of topics such as election fraud, Goldman Sachs, the Patriot Act, FEMA camps, and primary voting machine accountability. And that's just the name of a handful of topics. Now, I have an informational clip here that describes some of the importance of the grand jury. And here you go.
Introducing the book. Do you want to see this or this? This or this? This or this? It all depends upon corruption staying in power. Do you want to see this or this? If government officials commit corruption, what holds them accountable? The American government by the four branches. First, second, third, fourth. It is the fourth branch that holds corruption accountable. Is it the duty of the fourth branch of government to hold corruption accountable? The present Arizona State Supreme Court Chief Justice believes so. A county fourth branch is responsible for investigating possible public offenses, including corrupt or willful misconduct in office by public officials, and return a criminal indictment or true bill formally accusing someone of a crime. The powers and duties of the state fourth branch are similar to those of the county fourth branch, except they extend statewide. 9 out of 10 Americans are probably wondering, do we have a fourth branch of government? Yes. Maybe you are requiring, show me what the fourth branch has done. The fourth branch has held to account these top government officials: the Watergate boys and Nixon, former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, former U.S. House Majority Leader, Tom DeLay. A further list is provided courtesy of the fourth branch. County level accountability. A district attorney. There, the fourth branch turned a prosecutor into a defendant. And many other county officials have been held to account by the fourth branch. State level examples. Federal level examples. One may be wondering, why have I never heard a summary of the fourth branch holding government officials accountable? Or, where did the fourth branch come from? Answer: England, almost 8 centuries ago. Second answer, and the founding fathers tying it to the Constitution. What do attorneys say about the fourth branch? Attorney Leo D'Onofrio of New Jersey coined the phrase, the fourth branch. Distinguished professor of law Susan Brenner also confirms the fourth branch as the fourth branch. Again, some will ask, why have I never heard of the fourth branch? Answer: for corruption to expand, the knowledge of the fourth branch must be suppressed. The following countries had not the fourth branch: Stalin's Russia, Hitler's Nazi Germany, Mao's China. In comparison, England's fourth branch has assisted England's longevity to over 900 years. Because of lack of a fourth branch in these countries, neither Stalin, Hitler, or Mao could be stopped. During the reign of genocide, their governments murdered over 60 million people. In America, the fourth branch held not just Nixon, but other presidents to account: Jackson, Johnson, and Clinton. The fourth branch is also in different forms: county level, state level, and federal level. There is a reason you haven't heard of the fourth branch of government. The powers that be are afraid of the fourth branch. Who are the they? You can fill in the blank. Corrupt government officials, elected officials, congressmen, corporations, etc. They are afraid of the fourth branch because it will put them and their minions in jail. The fourth branch is 796 years old, tied to the U.S. Constitution, affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court in over a dozen court cases, and they can't get rid of it. The only thing they can do is perpetrate ignorance upon the American people, and they have done this very well. What is the fourth branch? Well, let's start with the first three branches of government, commonly known as legislative, executive, and judicial. But practically these days, the three branches of government are Larry, Moe, and Curly, made this way by the two main political parties of Laurel and Hardy. Enter in the fourth branch as the grand jury, as necessary to investigate and hold accountable the corruption picking our pockets, holding to account corruption within any of the other three branches. When we the people learn of the power of the grand jury, or the fourth branch, they will be afraid of this. Why should they be afraid? They commit corruption, lie, cheat, and steal to get into power. How else did a governor, a president, a House Majority Leader, and a New York State Supreme Court justice get caught? What about socialists? Do they commit corruption? Who wrote, "The ends justify the means"? Socialist Saul Alinsky, this in his book, Rules for Radicals. The grand jury is very powerful, has and will continue to thwart corruption. In summary, the grand jury pierces the silence of witnesses that witness corruption, issues subpoenas up the chain of command, accumulates evidence, and issues an indictment. That is why they, in their fear of it, have perpetrated ignorance. Hands-on approach. Anyone can file a complaint with the grand jury. There are many avenues within a jurisdiction. There are many jurisdictions in which to file a complaint. For example, a federal attorney must inform the special federal grand jury of a complaint received. The word in section 3332 is shall. Not might, not could, not good idea, but shall inform the grand jury of the complaint submitted. Notice the type of grand jury indicting Governor Blagojevich. The Founding Fathers knew full well this power. Thomas Jefferson said this, "I consider trial by jury as the only anchor ever yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution." However, this knowledge has faded. Do you want to see this or this? Do you want to see this or this? Corruption and the powers that be do not want you to see this book. They are afraid you will learn of the power of the grand jury. They are afraid you will file a complaint. They are afraid the grand jury will issue an indictment yielding an arrest warrant. Hence the name of the book, The Hidden Fourth Branch, A Corrupt Government's Worst Nightmare, available on Amazon.com.
Okay, folks, and that gives you an idea of what the guest author is going to be talking about. And he'll be in here in about 15 minutes because we have it scheduled for him to come in at 8:30 this evening. Now, one guy that I think would be a perfect example of someone who could possibly be looked at and possibly brought in front of the grand jury is this gentleman right here. His name is Vincent Rada. And listen to what he said. Now, take in mind, this was done, this was taken from a robocall that was done the day before the New York primary.
Hello, this is Rockland County Republican Chairman Vincent Rada calling to remind you that tomorrow, April 24th, is primary day in New York. It is imperative that us Republicans get out to vote and support Mitt Romney for president. Even though the other candidates have dropped out of the race, it is imperative that we show we are united behind the one man that could beat Barack Obama in November. So please, get your families and friends and fellow Republicans out to vote and support Mitt Romney for president tomorrow, April 24th. Polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Please make every effort to get out and support Mitt Romney for president. Thank you.
Now, you see, the problem with this is that and the day that he made this robocall, or the alleged robocall, is both Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich were still both actively running. That call was before both candidates suspended their campaigns. Now, as I said, that was the day before the New York primary. So when the gentleman said that all other candidates have dropped out, that sounds a lot like a lie. And the speculation is that the robocall was purposely done in order to have a low voter turnout, voter suppression, and it was actually very effective because New York's primary in 2012, the voter turnout was down by 78%. Down from 2008. So it was very effective. And as you see the clip or heard the clip, you'll realize that indeed he lied because, you know, as I said, both Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich were still actively running in the campaign. Also, something that bears that some people would like to see looked into is a possibility of Romney being in some sort of way a part of Medicare fraud. That's what, that's what is alleged. Medicare fraud while he was at, I believe, a company called Damon Company. And you'll hear the exact name of that company in this clip. And we'll play this one, too, while you wait and see what you think.
For most of the 20th century, America's leaders saw the need to help the elderly afford medical care. President Eisenhower championed legislation. It became known as Medicare. Later, President Kennedy fought for it. President Johnson finally signed the Medicare bill into law, and every American president since has worked somehow to protect, improve, or strengthen Medicare.
The social safety net of programs they depend on are exempt from any cuts. Medicare will not be cut.
After all, generations of Americans have relied on Medicare for half a century. But there are those who prey upon it.
Billing Medicare for services they never provided or patients didn't need.
The government says that con artists are draining the lifeblood out of it by filing millions of dollars in phony claims.
At the center of one such Medicare scheme, Mitt Romney. It's a story of fraud, a story of big profits, big lies, and at the time, the biggest criminal fine for healthcare fraud ever levied in Massachusetts history. The company was Damon Clinical Laboratories. In 1989, Mitt Romney's company led a takeover of the medical testing outfit. Romney would manage the company and serve on its board of directors. Under Romney's direction, the company was making huge profits. But as Forbes magazine reported, Romney was supervising a medical testing company guilty of massive Medicare fraud.
At a time when money is tighter than ever, this kind of fraud is costing Americans as much as $90 billion a year.
The company was misleading doctors, ordering complex and unnecessary blood tests, not disclosing to doctors that Damon Corporation was billing Medicare at a much higher rate for each unnecessary test. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, under Romney, the number of tests billed to Medicare on an annual basis skyrocketed. Medicare paid more than $16 million for unnecessary iron deficiency tests alone. But it didn't stop there. Romney's company was ordering unnecessary blood tests for coronary artery disease. In order to ensure doctors wouldn't complain, the company made it difficult for them to receive a coronary risk profile for patients if they didn't go along. For busy doctors caring for their patients, there was little choice. The tests were ordered, and the Damon Corporation would issue another fraudulent bill to Medicare.
We've got to attack the rampant fraud that exists in numerous government programs.
The illegal activity was happening right under Romney's nose. Romney kept a watchful eye on profits, while tens of millions of dollars in illegal Medicare money flowed through the door.
One of the ways I'll do that is by enacting far stiffer penalties for those who steal from taxpayers.
But under Romney, Damon Corporation was the one stealing from taxpayers. The scheme wasn't going completely unnoticed. A task force of federal officials had launched Operation Lab Scam to investigate clinical laboratories who they suspected of fraudulent Medicare billing. Squarely in their sights, Mitt Romney's Damon Corporation. It is unclear whether Mitt Romney was aware of Operation Lab Scam, but his timing in 1993 is suspicious. While federal agents under the U.S. Attorney's Office were busy closing in on Damon Corporation, Romney was busy orchestrating a sale of Damon to Corning. Finally, a 7-page subpoena was served on the Damon corporate headquarters on August 24, 1993. In an incredible coincidence shown in SEC filings, Romney's company sold Damon to Corning in August 1993. At the very same time, the Fed subpoena was issued. Two whistleblowers came forward under Corning, and Medicare fraud charges were brought. The systemic fraud under Romney's reign finally ended. The Boston Globe reported Romney was completely unaware of any investigation. But later, Romney changed his story, claiming that he helped uncover the fraud and the illegal activity, asking the board's lawyers to investigate, saying the board took corrective action. But both federal investigators and Corning rebuffed Romney's claims, stating that Corning stopped the fraud, not Mitt Romney. In fact, Romney never reported the fraudulent Medicare activities to authorities. In 1996, the Damon Corporation pled guilty to defrauding Medicare. Damon was ordered to pay the U.S. government $119 million to resolve all federal and Medicaid criminal and civil claims. The government said the settlement covered literally millions of fraudulent claims. At the time, it was the largest criminal fine for healthcare fraud ever levied in Massachusetts history. Incredibly, when Romney's firm orchestrated a sale of Damon Corporation to Corning Incorporated, it tripled its investment, walking away with a $12 million profit. The Boston Globe reports Romney personally pocketed $500,000 from the deal. In a now familiar Mitt Romney refrain, thousands lost their jobs and the company went bankrupt. Cost to American taxpayers? The Boston Globe put the figure at nearly $40 million. Just 10 years later, no one might suspect Mitt Romney had been at the center of one of the greatest Medicare frauds of the 1990s.
I can't wait to get my hands on Washington.
One longtime reporter for the Boston Globe and co-author of the new biography, The Real Romney, put it this way.
I certainly think that there's reason to question, if you're looking at sort of who he is politically, sort of what he really is inside.
Even more troubling, Romney denies his business ever had any dealings at all with Medicare.
Did Bain ever do any work with the government like Medicare?
We didn't do any work with the government.
Folks, I guess you didn't want to hear the rest of that music. That's all that's left of that clip. I noticed in the chat we have a lot of guests. We have about 7 minutes left. So if any of the guests would like to call in before the author gets here, you very well may, and chime in to anything you might have heard for a few minutes until he comes in. But once he does get here, I'll have to clear the floor for him. But if you'd like to call in, the call in number is area code 347-945-7428. And I will put that in the chat. Give me a moment here. There it is. There you go. There's the number if you would like to call in to chime in before the author gets here. Now, here's another person I'm sure a lot of you have heard before. Now, he isn't, I can't say this would be voter fraud or anything of that nature. However, what was said here was not true. And this voice, as I said, will probably be familiar to you. But this was said on the day of the Florida primary.
By the way, folks, just... I have to remind you again that Gingrich debated John Kerry on global warming at one point, and they agreed on practically every point. Nobody is innocent. Everybody is guilty of some transgression at somewhere against conservatism, except Santorum. See you tomorrow.
And, of course, that all panned out to be known not to be true. Santorum, when he actually did his transgression, was done, you know, so he's blamed too, because what he did is Santorum backed an anti-conservative Arlen Specter's run for re-election instead of backing the conservative Pat Toomey. I guess that's something that Rush Limbaugh forgot about. So anybody want to chime in about that? Got a couple minutes left. Type something in the chat here. Okay, well, it looks like our guest author is here 5 minutes early, and that is fine with me. That is great. So let me give him a little introduction. Okay, we have Kelly Z. Mordecai in, and he has written a book called The Hidden Fourth Branch, and he is here tonight to discuss his book. And at this time, I would like to open up the mic. Hello, Kelly. How are you? Welcome to Bard's Logic Political Talk.
Hey, Robert. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. And Kelly, I just listened to the last 2 minutes of your show. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Corruption's rampant. It's just out of control.
Exactly. And then did you hear the part about the possible Medicare fraud by Romney with Damon's corporation?
Oh, gosh. You know, even if Romney does win the nomination, the Democrats are going to crucify him over that.
Oh, yeah, that among other things.
Yeah. Yeah, boy. Yeah, I liked our talk earlier today, you know, kind of in preparation of the show. I see a lot of common threads. You obviously like Gingrich, I like Ron Paul, but we have a really common thread of, you know, constitution and liberty and a government that's really, it needs to be held to account. And that's, you know, we had a good chat today. We've got a lot of commonality, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Definitely. I mean, because you know, it's been said by some of the people who's called in here that Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul probably have about 80%, you know, I mean, you can disagree with me if you'd like, but about 80% of agreement on a lot of things.
Well, yeah, and it's really beautiful. I know there is a little feathers ruffled, but what I see coming out of the Tea Parties and that movement, we've got a lot of people that like the Constitution. They connected. They studied more. They learned more from each other. It was great. And then the primaries came along, and people just picked different flavors, and that's the way it is. And now we're coming back together, and especially for this potential brokered convention. And so it's rather exciting talking. You know, I'm talking to some Gingrich people. You know, Barbara Haney, she's really good. She's kind of a hoot. She's fun to talk to, which definitely loves Gingrich, but we both love the Constitution more than our candidates that we, you know, preferenced, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
so,
in the beginning of the show, about, I'd say about 6 minutes in, I played the clip, I believe, from your website to talk about called The Fourth Branch.
The Hidden Fourth Branch, yeah.
It's the Hidden Fourth Branch. I just have it on my descriptor here. It's the Fourth Branch. but it is that one. So either A, you know, I could go ahead and play it again for the new the people who are in, because there's some people that have been in and out. It's about 6 minutes. You pretty much got the floor tonight as long as you like. I know there's some people who might later on want to touch on a subject that you know, you have some knowledge about, but we could discuss that later. Right now, the main point is to inform people about your book, The Hidden Fourth Branch, what it's about. I could start it off once again playing the clip, or if you would like to, you could just go ahead and start telling us what it's about.
Well, yeah, it's about the power of the grand jury, and the grand jury is very powerful. It's amazingly powerful, and we'll get into that. But the hidden is hidden because most people don't know about it, but the fourth branch, that phrase was coined by Leo D'Onofrio, an attorney in New Jersey. And then he was citing all sorts of case law, which I'll read a little bit later. And then distinguished professor of law, Susan Brenner at UC Dayton, also confirmed that the grand jury is the fourth branch of government. You know, these days we have three branches of government, commonly known as legislative, executive, and judicial. But practically these days, the three branches of government are Larry, Moe, and Curley, and made that way by the two main political parties of Laurel and Harvey. And so, you know, we kind of have a mess. Where's the accountability? What's happening? Why are, you know, Romney doing this thing you just played about health care I didn't know about? Why are the people like this not being held to account? When a government agent commits corruption, what can you do about it? Well, what can you do? Well, you can submit a complaint with a grand jury, be it county, state, if you have one in your state, or federal. And it's very powerful. I want to give you a few examples, real practical, hands-on. This has really happened stories, if you will. We start with this. We're going to start with the county level. In 1988, Siskiyou County, California, that's where I live, at beautiful Mount Shasta here, the district attorney was just totally negligent. Child abusers were let go free. A number of cases, when a two-year-old was murdered, he did absolutely nothing. So the grand jury got it gone on it and issued an indictment against him. His name is Charles Slope. He may be completely innocent or not, but the grand jury indicted him and said, look, you're done. In that situation, that scenario, a district attorney with an indictment against him, the grand jury turned a prosecutor into a defendant. So what happened next was the good old boys network up here, which we, the people, have gotten out of power, but voted them out of power in the new local newspaper. But the good old boys got him off. He got cleared, charges dropped. But the next election, he got creamed. Before the grand jury indictment, he was heading for his third term as a district attorney. And at that time, he had pretty much 66% of the vote. He was going to get in again. Well, after the newspaper press release, the people found out, instead of 66, he only got 33%. It completely reversed the polls on him, and he was done. So that's just a county example. In Cuyahoga County, Ohio, there was a big mess there. County judge got indicted. County supervisors, or commissioners, I guess that they have commissioners there.
Right. Did you say I'm in a county?
The Cuyahoga County?
Oh, Cuyahoga.
Yeah.
I'm from Ohio, that's how I can pronounce that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
So a couple of judges, county judges got taken out. I mean, it was just a disaster. Even there was an engineer in public works that got taken out. It was just a mess. In California, we have a beautiful thing called a civil grand jury. We have two types of grand juries in California counties. We have a criminal grand jury, which is randomly selected, just like regular jury duty. And then we have a civil grand jury that you can volunteer for. And with the environmentalists doing their thing, there's and me and other people educating, we're stacking the civil grand jury with constitutionally minded people who are hopefully we're going to catch the environmentalists in a bunch of lies, because the grand jury can go ahead and investigate corporations and look at things. So hopefully, and we're like ground zero with the environmentalist movement. We have enormous resources here, but people are broke because a bunch of environmentalists lies. But the grand jury is it's enormously powerful.
Well, I'm going to interject something real quick, Kelly, is that with environmentalists, one of the things that I contend is I consider myself an environmentalist, and I contend that the liberals and Democrats have pretty much hijacked the environmental movement, the propagandized their redistribution of wealth agenda. You know, and I actually have a show on Thursday nights called Green Conservatism. It's kind of the alternative to the liberal / Democrat model of environmental protection. But I just wanted to interject that. So go ahead.
Well, that's a really good idea, because I think if conservatives get into the environmental movement, we will have much more sound, reasonable legislation. I actually do environmental consulting. And
yes, tell me about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I lie, I can lose my professional engineer's registration. The state will come in on me and say, you're done. But, you know, environmentalists somehow get away with it. Well, not for long. But anyway, I want to go up the chain of command all the way into Washington, D.C. with the power of the grand jury. And by the way, the grand jury is just composed of your friends and neighbors looking into the government. Okay? That's just kind of a quick synopsis. And so up the chain of command. Okay. In Alabama, there was about five state senators who were going to sell their vote for a casino operation. The grand jury says, no, you're not. You're all going to jail. And they did. So that's state senators. In New York, it was Kings County, which is Brooklyn, a county grand jury indicted a state Supreme Court justice. His name was Gerald P. Garson. Garson had a bribery racket going on regarding family law. Basically, you pay a private fixer who goes and pays the court, and with family law and custody with kids, you basically win. And he was found out. The only way this kind of corrupt racket could go on is all the way at the top. And so the Kings County Grand Jury indicted Garson, and he was arrested at his home. So a county grand jury took out a state Supreme Court justice. And so then we keep going up the chain of command here. Oh, by the way, sheriffs, county sheriffs have been held account by the grand jury. Governor Blagojevich, you've heard of him. He's been in the news last year or so.
Yeah, yep. That was big news.
Yeah. So his thing, he was trying to sell Obama's seat to highest bidder and pleaded before the judge, saying, well, I just didn't know. Oh, really? 19 counts the grand jury indicted you for. 17 counts you were convicted in trial by jury. You were facing 300 years, and this I don't know got him only 14 years, but he's done politically. Yeah. And there's an Ohio governor, I believe another one. Yeah, in Louisiana, grand juries were indicting them, and basically the end result, once you get indicted and it gets out in the press, your political career is over. So, you know, even if they're not convicted, they're protected by good old boys. They're pretty much done. So now we're going to go into the federal level. our Congress doesn't seem to have a clean nose. In our nation's history, over 104 congressmen have been indicted. It seems like about one every session. Many of these have been taken out by grand juries. There's an Alaska senator, I can't remember his name, but a grand jury got him. And then there's, I'm not ripping just on Democrats, but I'm going to rip on Republicans, too, because corruption is an equal opportunity employer. It just so happens that, and independents, too, and that Alabama case with the casino, an independent was involved. So it's like two Democrats, two Republicans, an independent, and the actual indictment's in my book. You can actually see it. So, yeah, corruption is an equal opportunity employer. Well, grand jury is an equal opportunity indictor. So the conscience of the people on the grand jury says, we don't care about a political party anymore. You're doing wrong. You're going to jail. So Tom DeLay was a House Majority Leader. And
can you give me more information about DeLay? Yeah, I've got some mixed thoughts on what happened to him. But do you have any more information on that to maybe jog my memory of what happened with him? Can you go into that? Or would you like
to go into that? I'd like to. Yeah, well, Ronnie Earl was a DA in Travis County, Texas. And Ronnie Earl, obviously, a Democrat, just was a nemesis to Tom DeLay. And I liked how Tom DeLay led Congress to a more conservative mindset, more consciously mindset. That's great, okay. But Ronnie Earl kept trying. He presented to a grand jury not once, not twice, but finally, the third time, Ronnie Earl presented evidence of money laundering for an election campaign, and the grand jury indicted him. Now, it's important to note that Tom DeLay's district is highly Republican. I know Austin isn't quite so conservative, but still, a highly Republican district, he was indicted. And in trial by jury, he was convicted. So, grand jury took him out, and then the trial by jury convicted him, so... And he was going to appeal it and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. We haven't heard. So, which is kind of another unique thing, is that double jeopardy doesn't necessarily apply with a grand jury because they can try several times, and we might find out ultimately from the Supreme Court whether double jeopardy applies with a grand jury. But anyway, so I want to keep working up the chain of command here. because it gets bigger than. And by the way, Tom DeLay, he was the House Majority Leader.
Right.
He was the number one man in the U.S. House of Representatives. And so, yeah, the grand jury dealt with him up the chain of command. In June of 72, five men broke into the Watergate Hotel. You remember Watergate and all that? They were going to bug the Democratic headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Well, several grand juries got busy investigating the whole thing, and it wasn't Woodward and Bernstein, by the way, if you watch All the President's Men. It's a movie, by the way. Yeah.
It was Forrest
by
Gump,
the time,
I thought. Gump turned it. I thought it was Forrest Gump. You ever see the movie Forrest Gump?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that part where he's like, calls, I think they have their lights off over there or whatever he said.
That
part where he talked about Watergate using the hotel or something across the street, and he's like, I think there might be the lights off over there. I just like to interject humor every once in a while. Go on, Kel.
Yeah, well, Forrest Gump, I think he said, my mom always said, politics is like a box of chocolates. You just don't know how corrupt you're going to get. So they broke in, and then grand jury got busy, started investigating different things from all over the country. Woodward Bernstein mentioned in the movie All the President's Men, Woodward and Bernstein mentioned the grand jury multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't Woodward and Bernstein that took out a president, although the movie made you feel that way. The grand jury was way ahead of them. So ultimately, under the subpoena power and other powers grand juries have, they got into the White House with Chuck Colson. And, oh, by the way, in this process, the Watergate boys were lying in front of the grand jury, and they were later found out, because the grand jury has the power to subpoena those people around those who committed perjury, and several of them went to jail for perjury. So it worked up the chain of command, and ultimately the results were turned over to Congress. They eventually got the Watergate tapes, and then the House Judiciary Committee wrote up articles of impeachment, and Nixon resigned. So
right, before I had the chance to get impeached. Not the chance, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Right. So what was your, go ahead, I don't want to interrupt you, go ahead.
So that's kind of a practical hands-on, what it has done. Not many people know. You might see grand jury indictment in the paper at home. Well, you know, what a big deal, what's that about? You just kind of glance over it. I used to, because I've studied the Constitution, case law, I studied codes, all this stuff. People ask me, are you an attorney? I said, no, I'm honest. I just research a lot. Yeah. So here's some words from the Chief Justice of the Arizona Supreme Court. It's Rebecca White Birch. She writes, a county grand jury is responsible for investigating possible public offenses, including corrupt or willful misconduct in office by public officials, and return a criminal indictment or true bill formally accusing someone of a crime. The powers and duties of the state grand jury are similar to those of the county grand jury, except they extend statewide. And so that's, lost my train of thought. But basically, a grand jury is necessary for holding our government accountable. And I'm pulling up really quickly the Missouri Constitution. And this is a very powerful statement they put in their constitution, because they knew it was so important. Here it is. Article 1, Section 16. Excuse me. All right. It says grand juries, composition, jurisdiction to convene, and powers. That's like the heading. The grand jury shall consist of 12 citizens, any 9 of whom concurring may find an indictment or true bill. Okay, when so assembled, such grand jury shall have the power to investigate and return indictments for all character and grades of crime, and that the power of grand jury, this is the most important part, it's the last sentence, and that the power of grand juries to inquire into the willful misconduct in office of public officers and to find indictments in connection therewith shall never be suspended.
And would you care to elaborate on that point? Give a little layman's terms for, you know, what the meaning behind that one is?
That's the some say the Missouri Constitution is the best state constitution in the nation. It's really good. The shall never be suspended. See, what happens is attorneys and judges try to play games with grand juries, try to prevent evidence from being submitted to a grand jury. Because what would happen if you and I were on a federal grand jury and we found out about Romney's deal with the health care fraud, et cetera, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
Would we try to convince other grand juries to get enough votes for a subpoena, start investigating?
Okay.
Now, sometimes DAs try to protect their own. Obviously, in Tom DeLay's situation, he had an enemy, which was Ronnie Earle, the Democrat, and he was like, yeah, I'm getting this to the grand jury. Yeah, I'm going to get it. But sometimes there's games played. Sometimes attorneys or judges will play gatekeeper games.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a number of tricks to submit to grand juries when they're doing this. And I write about that in my book, too. But shall never be suspended is extremely important because it basically says we the people on the grand jury to look into our government officials for corruption and willful misconduct. And another thing that's even more powerful, or maybe just as powerful, is the Supreme Court's permission, if you will, on a grand jury's power to investigate. This is Supreme Court Justice.
That's a good thing. Yeah, about the investigation part, that's something that really piques my interest because, you know, obviously you have proof or anything for this to go. So let's say, for instance, you know, in the beginning of the show, I'm sure you heard about the Vincent Rada robocall. And
yeah.
I'm sure you heard about the, you know, the clip with Romney and it was Medicare fraud. How would people go about having that investigated to see, you know, if those, you know, those alleged cases are valid?
Oh, well, here, let me read something to you. Basically, okay, this is what gets even better about a complaint with a grand jury. You're writing a letter to your friends. Here's a letter. It doesn't have to be in perfect legalese, and you don't have to have your facts perfect either. You just have to give them enough information that they take up a complaint and they begin their own investigation. Their job is to solidify the evidence for an indictment. I mean, theoretically, you can write a complaint on a napkin and get it to a grand jury. you know, and so it's a lot more loose as far as legal structure. There's very little for procedure, you know, like in court, okay, with the attorneys. There's rules of evidence, rules of procedure, rules of da-da-da-da. There's books written about this. No, the grand jury, you're just writing a letter to your friends and neighbors. So, like in California, you can file a complaint with a civil grand jury. In other states, you have to go through the district attorney or a judge. Now, in California, the Penal Code, PC 904, says the judge shall convene a grand jury when in the best interest of the public. Meaning I can write a letter to a judge, say, look, it turns over the DA, he did nothing, and now I want you to look into this, and I want you to convene a grand jury, and I want you to submit this to them. Because there is interaction between a DA and a judge. Anyway, grand jury in Texas, for example, the grand jury completely runs the show. I mean, it's phenomenal. The district attorney must prosecute once a grand jury indicts. In California, the district attorney can take the indictment and kind of throw it away. There's all 50 states, and they're all different. So, but if we go to the federal grand jury, okay, it's called a special federal grand jury, and it is, I'm going to read a code section here, but basically it comes out like this. When you submit a complaint to a special federal grand jury through a federal attorney, and you ask so in writing that they present it to the grand jury, they have to. Let's see. I've got the close. Okay. Such alleged offenses, this is United States Code, Title 18, Section 3232. Such alleged offenses may be brought to the attention of the grand jury by the court or by an attorney appearing on behalf of the United States for the presentation of evidence. Any such attorney receiving information concerning such an alleged offense from any other person shall, if requested by such other person, inform the grand jury of such alleged offense. The word is shall, not might, not could, not good idea. It's just shall inform the grand jury of a complaint received. Now, here's where it gets bizarre. I was on William Windsor's talk show. It's called Lawless America. He was talking about Eric Holder. Now, Eric Holder's under crosshairs. And, Eric Holder has directed federal attorneys to not inform grand juries of complaints received. That means the chief law enforcement officer of the country, the Attorney General, has directed those attorneys under him to break the law. So isn't that kind of interesting?
Yes, definitely, definitely. I wonder if any of that came from the president.
I can tell you that if a grand jury got flooded with complaints, you know, as we flood congressmen with letters, we can also flood grand juries with complaints. And I'm wondering what would happen if grand juries all over this country got flooded with complaints, asking that grand jury, or all those grand juries, there's 89 federal districts, if the grand juries were asked to issue a subpoena upon a birth certificate, if we'd finally get it. Yeah, it has that power. I mean, it took down a president. Anyway, so that's basically, you and I, we operate more on our conscience. If we know our powers, grand jury members, we don't have to be befuddled. We do not have to be befuddled by all these attorney and legalese phrases. We can just do what we want. But here's another quote, Supreme Court Justice Robert Huell Jackson. The grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even just because it wants assurance that it is not.
Ooh,
that's U.S. versus Martin Salt. Yeah, it wants assurance. Hey, show us what's going on. We want assurance the law isn't being violated. The Supreme Court says we can do this. We're going to issue a subpoena. And also, a grand jury can issue a subpoena based on hearsay evidence. That's DeSalle versus the United States and United States versus DiNozzo. So what happens is a grand jury gets a complaint from somebody. They want to take it up. They kind of do a little bit of investigations themselves, and then they start issuing subpoenas. If you do not comply with the subpoena to show up or produce evidence, that is essentially contempt of court. Theoretically, it's contempt of grand jury. And boom, there's an arrest warrant for you. So you have to show up.
Really?
Yeah. Here's a simple question. As a witness, I'll say that again, as a witness, you have a subpoena, you appear before the grand jury, and begin to ask questions that you don't want to answer. As a witness, do you have the right to plead the Fifth Amendment? You know, I plead the Fifth for right to remain silent. Does that stay in effect in front of a grand jury?
I'm uncertain. I don't know.
Okay, well, most people will say,
I'm saying no.
Okay. Well, yeah, because it's a trick question. I introduce it that way. But, yeah, you're on it. Okay. As a witness, you do not have the right to remain silent. If you're the accused, of course you have the right to remain silent. But
as a witness, okay.
As a witness, tell us what you know or you're going to jail. Susan McDougal, remember Clinton Whitewater situation?
Mm-hmm.
Susan McDougal was business partner. Well, she wouldn't answer questions. Grand jury says, okay, you're going to jail for 18 months. You want to answer the questions? We'll let you go. And how it works, yeah, a little bit more details. And this can happen in regular trials, too. But what happens is the judge grants immunity. So as a witness, whatever you say can and will not, cannot be used against you in a court of law. So once you have immunity, then you're ordered to answer the questions.
Okay.
So,
and the only thing
so,
you can be charged with is by not answering the question.
Yeah, it's contempt of court, or
contempt
in this
court,
case,
right.
Yeah, contempt of grand jury, and you get out when the grand jury's session is done, but then the new grand jury can pull you in, and you can repeat the process and forever go to jail. And more grand juries, you repeat the process, you come, answer questions, no, you won't, okay, out to jail you go. So what this does is it pierces the silence of witnesses that witness corruption, and based on hearsay and its great power, they can start issuing subpoenas up the chain of command. And that's what happened with the Watergate boys. And so, you know, and again, witnesses to, well, my boss's boss did this, and we'll get them in here. You know, and so it's pretty much enormously powerful. And the powers that be are really much afraid of the power of the grand jury. The grand jury started in 1215 A.D., and the Magna Carta, as far as the sword function, there's a shield function where a grand jury can choose not to indict somebody. That's his use of Clarendon in 1166, where King Henry took the indictment power out of the hands of the Catholic Church, put it in the hands of everyday people, and so people were protected by their neighbors saying, hey, we're not going to indict him. Same with jury nullification and trial by jury. The law itself is on trial just as much as the facts to be decided. That's 12th Supreme Court Chief Justice Harlan Stone. He said that in 1942. That's jury nullification and trial by jury. The grand jury holds the same power as a shield, saying we're not indicting this person. The original Tea Party in Boston, the grand jury members there would not indict the colonials, and King George was furious. So anyway, that's the shield function. The sword function, allowing the grand jury to investigate the government, came through the Magna Carta of 1215 A.D. And so the grand jury is 796 years old. So the grand jury is over, you know, almost eight centuries old. It's tied to the Constitution through the Fifth Amendment. It's been affirmed by the Supreme Court in over a dozen court cases. The powers that be cannot get rid of it. I say the powers that be, corrupt people, whatever, or puppeteers pulling a string on congressmen, whatever, pass NDAA, all the games they play. But, okay, 8th century old, tied to the Constitution, to the Fifth Amendment, Supreme Court has affirmed it. Powers that be cannot get rid of it. The only thing they can do is perpetrate ignorance upon the American people of this great power. And the powers that be have done this very well.
Yeah, and is it just lack of information, lack in the books, or how are they keeping it from the people?
How are they what?
How you said, you know, the powers that be are, you know, that's why it's called the hidden fourth branch. Is it?
Right.
I mean, in what ways are they hiding it? I'm not saying that they're not. Because you're right, I've never really heard of much about it until you know, your book. So is it just, you know, the lack of them talking about it, or in what ways are they purposely? And I'm not saying they are. I'm just, what should we look for in the ways that we know that they're trying to hide this fact, if this exists?
It's the power of the grand jury is out of the textbooks. There's a kid going to local college. He had a history book I wrote. On a margin of his textbook, $50 if you find grand jury mentioned in your textbook.
Okay. So
American,
that's exactly
course.
What I mean. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wasn't even in there. Wasn't in the textbook. You don't learn about this in your high school government classes, political science. Even attorneys do not know very much about this power. And, oh, by the way, this happens to be a business competitor to attorneys. For example, if the citizens of your community know the government's out of control, and they choose not to indict you for some silly law that was just made, your attorney's fees are over, done. No indictment, they can't move forward. Attorneys don't make much money, so it is a business competitor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, now, it is one attorney who knows full well his power. His name is Roger Roots. He wrote in the Creighton Law Review, if it's not a runaway grand jury, it's not a real grand jury. And he knew the full power of it, and we talked for quite some time. And he said this first in our meeting. He said, ever since the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure were passed in 1946, the government has grown exponentially. And I said, oh my gosh, I wrote up that in my book. Well, what the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure did was try to deceive the grand jury out of its power.
Hmm.
Yes, but the Supreme Court has come back and said, no, it is very powerful, and people can ignore what the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure say. I want to read something to you from, and we need to get on to the broker convention thing, because I know you want to talk about that.
Okay.
Here's a quote from, this is United States versus Williams. This is, actually, I'll start with U.S. versus Calandra. Justice Powell, 1974, wrote this. The institution of the grand jury is deeply rooted in Anglo-American history. In England, the grand jury served for centuries both as a body of accusers sworn to discover and present for trial persons suspected of criminal wrongdoing and as a protector of citizens against arbitrary and oppressive government action. In this country, the founders thought the grand jury so essential to basic liberties that they provided in the Fifth Amendment that federal prosecution for serious crimes can only be instituted by a presentment or indictment of a grand jury. Now, that is the shield function, because you have a referee or a buffer between the government and the accused. It's your friends and neighbors stepping in the middle. The government says, we want to indict them, and your friends and neighbors say, no, we ain't doing this. Or they can, actually. But here's another thing. This is Leo D'Onofrio's words about the grand jury after compiling all this case law. In addition to its traditional role of screening criminal cases for prosecution, common law grand juries had the power to exclude prosecutors from their presence at any time. And, oh, by the way, California has that same power. It's in the penal code. So basically, the judge and the district attorney have to leave the room when the grand jury is deliberating or talking. So we still have that. All right. Common law grand juries had the power to exclude prosecutors from their presence at any time and to investigate public officials without government influence. These fundamental powers allowed grand juries to serve a vital function of oversight upon the government. The function of a grand jury to ferret out government corruption was the primary purposes of the grand jury in ages past. This is the sword function that came to us through the Magna Carta. Now, Justice Scalia said this in United States versus Williams, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. Articles is, you know, meaning Article 1, Legislation 2, Executive 3, Judicial. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. And he goes further to say, in fact, the whole theory, this is Scalia's words again, in fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people.
Right, and that's you can battle against the corruption, and that's what's kind of like the oversight of the government to try to keep it from corruption.
Right, to investigate government officials for corruption.
Right.
Yeah, it's that powerful, and obviously, I talked to a supervisor in my county after he gave a speech to the Tea Party a little bit, and I talked to him afterwards. You know, I told him about the power of the grand jury. You know, if we really told a lot of people about the grand jury, they would be just so busy. Yes, that's the point. We have
right.
to clean out.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, well, one of the things we kind of, you know, rage against here, you know, on my show and another show, you're familiar with Samuel Samford's, and then another one, Mark Prysik, I was telling you about that show tonight. And, you know, is that, you know, people are so busy watching non-reality reality programs that they can be doing things such as, you know, looking into, you know, the grand jury and possibly looking into that and, you know, and Lewis, some of the corruptions, much like something we're going to talk about in a little bit. You know, I mean, for personally, I think too much TV is such a waste. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any stretch of the imagination. But sometimes I wonder with all these different, you know, shows and stuff coming out, it's a way to lull the American populace to sleep. You know, with all this, you know, these, you know, mundane, you know, not important, you know, reality shows to keep from actually getting out there, being active and doing something that's important to make a difference.
Well, I think maybe you have a point there, and also just the soothing. You know, my life is not fun. Inflation's eating me alive. Government's corrupt. Nothing I can do about it. Soothing. You know, what was it? Stalin talked about bread and circus.
Mm-hmm.
You give people bread and circus, and you can placate them and then control them. And I really believe in the American.
I think you
people.
Got that from the Romans, right?
No, I didn't.
It sounds like that's something he got from the Romans, you know, back in the, you know, Roman Empire days. Give them bread and circuses, you know, bread
well,
and circuses.
Well, you're right. Yeah, it does go back to that as well. But I think the real problem, I really believe in the American people. I believe there's really smart, intelligent, and hardworking people, and they love their families. But when it comes to politics and the corruption, they feel powerless. And they're tired of the nightly news being so corrupt, they just turn it off, and they tune out,
mm-hmm.
and they don't seem to care. I think the issue is they do not feel empowered. And that's exactly what the powers that be want to feel. Yeah.
I agree with that in part two. And maybe they drown themselves, you know, in these, you know, these TV programs to, you know, kind of deaden the pain of, as you said, the feeling of hopelessness where they feel like, well, what can I do? You know, they figure, well, if I can't do this, I'm not the sit down and relax after a hard day's work and you know, in front of the TV and forget about it for a while.
It's the placation, it's the soothing, it's the nothing I can do, so give me my beer and Monday Night Football. You know, so I would lean more that the American people feel a lack of empowerment. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book is because I believe in the American people. I believe
mm-hmm.
that they can take this message and they can do things. And there's a lot.
Because they've done it before. I mean, yeah, the American people were very empowered for a while, but then, you know, the powers that be just kind of, you know, kept pushing them down. And now it's, you know, it's time to, you know, to rise back up. And I think, you know, with your book and the information that you put out is, in my opinion, a good way to, a good start for them to, maybe get some feeling back of empowerment.
Yeah, and then what I see another result of empowerment is that people have more open minds and hearts to the corruption that's really going on. There's been multiple examples of people, I'm not much into politics, and it's like, I'm just kind of giving it, it's all corrupt, and da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm, yeah, you hear that
all about. Yeah, and then I tell them about the power of the grand jury, and they're like, oh, I mean, this is in person. I get a knee-jerk reaction about every time.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I tell them this great power, they go into bitching and complaining and even more than, I say, wow, you know, hey, buddy, that's a lot of bitching. I didn't think you were aware of things. Oh, I am, but when a person feels safe, or empowered, then they begin to complain about their frustrations. Maybe it's a psychological knee-jerk reaction, but I see that over and over. So it's. I think that's one of the problems with Americans is they have been beaten down to believe there's nothing they can do. And when I talked to two attorneys, they're pretty high profile. They've been in the news. They're trying to get Obama's birth certificate, all stuff. They failed.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to two of them, and I said, did you know this section of code that you can submit a complaint to? So, no, I did not.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even the people in the positions that they aren't aware of it. You know,
right.
One of the things I wanted to make sure we did tonight when talking about your book, I'd like to take this time to, if there's a website or anything that, I know there's a website, so you're kind of looking at it, the Hidden Fourth Branch. And I got a link here, and I was going to go ahead and put it in the chat. here in the you know, so people could go to. But also, if you'd like to, you know, tell the audience where they can purchase your book, where they can get it, go ahead and let them know.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's on Amazon. The book's on Amazon. Just type in Hidden Fourth Branch, the number 4TH, Hidden Fourth Branch, and it'll come up. And then there's the website is HiddenFourthBranch.com, again, the number 4TH. And there's a lot of information. I'm selling books, but not as many as I'd like, but that's because I put a lot of information on the web. And I'm okay with that because I want America to be free. You get a lot of information. The Netherlands, I have my web stats. The Netherlands are just studying this like crazy. I don't know what's up with that, but they spend an awful lot of time, and several thousand hits this month just from them.
Well, there you go. Well, I just put another link. I believe it's the link to Amazon. Let me just go ahead and click on it myself and find out here. There it is. With that link, you just click on it, and you know, it takes you to a link where you can you can buy it. And what I did, online, is I kind of put a picture for the people who come into the website, the Blog Talk website, is there's a little spot where you give a picture. I put a picture of the cover of the book on there, so they can have a visual of what they're looking for. So.
Oh, great! Yeah.
Yeah, but there's two links there, so. And plus, I was going to say just real quick, real good thing about the Blog Talk Radio is that they archive these episodes. And, right, they archive the episodes. And so, people who come in and listen to it, other than live, if they listen, further into it, then they'll be able to get the link, hear the links as well on the website.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And then, of course, I'd really would like you to come on again, but this is at the end of the conversation. There's another thing we talked about maybe discussing today. And if you want to say more on your book or more about the grand jury, go ahead and feel free to do it. That is the purpose of this, calling in. So if you want to chime in more, if you want to go to the next topic we discussed today, you got the floor, whichever you prefer.
Well, yeah, if people want to call in with questions, I'd be glad to, take a shot and answer them.
Well, yeah, good. Well, then I'm going to put this open to the audience out there. If you got any questions, you can call area code 347-945-7428. And while we're waiting for people to call in, and we really like to have some people chime in, I'm going to play, if you don't mind, Kelly, it's a 10-minute clip, but that gives people time to, get their phones, mull over it, and think of some questions to ask. And it's about the lawsuit versus the RNC by the Ron Paul campaign. I'm sure you're well aware of it, well versed in it. So if you don't mind waiting about the 10 minutes for me to play it, go ahead. All right, great. I'll just keep you on the line here, and I'll get back to you when the clip is over.
The purpose of this video is to give you a brief overview of the civil rights lawsuit being filed by Lawyers for Ron Paul and electionfraudremedy.com. We're a community of independent grassroots legal activists comprised of lawyers, paralegals, and concerned citizens, and we're filing a lawsuit against various state GOP parties and the Republican National Committee for voting rights violation and election fraud committed during the 2012 Republican presidential primary election phase. Why is this lawsuit necessary? We're preparing this lawsuit for our legal and physical protection. We have overwhelming evidence that the voting rights of Ron Paul Republican delegates and voters have been violated by nearly every state GOP party and the RNC during the 2012 primary election phase. The patterns of abuse have devolved to those of an organized criminal enterprise with utter and blatant disregard for any rule of law. As time marches on in anticipation of the National Convention, the severity of abuse is escalating. We need to take legal action to enforce our rights and to protect ourselves from further, more serious abuse. without this lawsuit, the pattern of abuse is guaranteed to get much worse. To the extent that the delegates who attend the national convention will be subjecting themselves to the risk of legal peril, and Ron Paul will be guaranteed to lose the nomination without our legal intervention. What immediate remedy are we seeking? We are seeking a declaratory statement and protective order that states unequivocally that all delegates from every state are unbound and free to vote their conscience at state and national conventions, and any attempt to coerce, intimidate, or threaten delegates under color of law in violation of Title 42 U.S.C. Section 1971 will be harshly legally punished. Without this statement and order, we are guaranteed to have escalated dangerous chaos and turmoil at conventions, along with the continued violations of our voting rights. What does federal law state about the protection of voting rights and unbound delegate status? The applicable law and core focus of this lawsuit is found under Title 42 U.S.C. 1971b, which states, intimidation, threats, or coercion. No person, whether acting under color of law or otherwise, shall intimidate, threaten, coerce, or attempt to intimidate, threaten, or coerce any other person for the purpose of interfering with the right of such other person to vote or to vote as he may choose, or of causing such other person to vote for or not vote for any candidate for the office of president, vice president, presidential elector, member of the Senate, or member of the House of Representatives, delegates, or commissioners from the territories or possessions at any general, special, or primary election held solely or in part for the purpose of selecting or electing any such candidate. We encourage you to do your own due diligence and research regarding the pertinent case law that is relevant to this lawsuit. We suggest that you start at Title 42 U.S.C. Section 1971 regarding voting rights. There you will find clear-cut guidelines for determining whether or not violations have occurred. Title 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, Civil Action for Deprivation of Rights, establishes causes of action and legal remedy that can be sought when our rights have been violated. The remedy may include monetary damages, fines, and imprisonment. To review definitions on campaigns, candidates, elections, and federal elections, go to 11 and 47 CFR. To review Supreme Court precedent-setting case law that's relevant to this lawsuit, please refer to Morse v. Republican Party of Virginia, 517 U.S. 186, 1995. Why are we asking delegates to participate? For the sake of our focused, immediate legal strategy, we are primarily seeking delegate plaintiffs to participate in this lawsuit. Due to the egregiously unfair treatment from the RNC and the majority of state GOP parties, regardless of their individual personal experiences, all Ron Paul delegates have been significantly disenfranchised, and the value of each of their votes has been significantly diminished. It's likely that delegates supporting other candidates may have also been violated. Additionally, Ron Paul delegates have personally experienced criminal violations and may have a duty to take legal action when they've been informed of criminal misconduct. The time-sensitive remedy we are seeking will directly affect their ability to participate and vote in upcoming conventions. Haven't others also been violated? Yes. The scope of violations is much more inclusive and far-reaching than the violations committed against the delegates. We are also preparing a RICO lawsuit to address many of the general election fraud violations that have occurred against all American voters. The less urgent RICO lawsuit will be filed later. Will there be any legal ramifications or risks for witnesses and plaintiffs in submitting evidence and joining this lawsuit? Many delegates have voiced their concerns about retaliation by the state GOP or RNC if they participate in this lawsuit, such as being stripped of delegate or executive member status, or being named in another suit as a defendant. These concerns are false and unfounded. In fact, the opposite is true. active witnesses and plaintiffs actually can expect much greater legal protections referred to as litigation privileges granted under constitutionally protected rights to due process. With litigation privileges, you'll have greater immunity and your delegate or executive member status and your right to vote as an unbound delegate will have extra protection from the courts. As a party to this lawsuit, any attempt to violate your rights will be closely scrutinized and more harshly punished than if you are not a member to the suit. All delegates are obligated to take legal action when they have been informed of criminal misconduct. What negative consequences might happen if we lose our lawsuit? In general, none. All witnesses and plaintiffs will be granted litigation privileges and will have greater immunity and extra protection from the courts. In fact, this lawsuit provides legal protection from further civil rights violations and the risk of legal peril. Perhaps a better question would be, what will happen if we don't file our lawsuit? If we don't file this lawsuit, we are guaranteed to suffer further, more egregious violations without legal recourse. Again, this lawsuit provides legal protection from further civil rights violation and the risk of legal peril. What will it cost to participate in this lawsuit? This case is being developed and executed pro bono, with no litigation fees being charged to any witnesses or plaintiffs whatsoever. Shouldn't we wait and give our state GOP party another chance to correct their misconduct? No! We urgently need your immediate support to help us document testimonies as evidence in support of our case. More witnesses, plaintiffs, and evidence will build a stronger case and result in more protection for us all. There's no reason whatsoever to expect the RNC or state GOP parties to comply with the law after they've openly threatened and injured Ron Paul Republican delegates. Expecting fair treatment without enforcing the law amounts to insanity, or expecting different results from the same continued actions. What steps do we need to take to participate? To be a part of this effort, go to electionfraudremedy.com and become a free member. After joining, log in and go to forums to submit your testimony on our private secure forum according to the state or territory in which you live. Start by providing your contact information and please indicate if you're interested in acting as a plaintiff. Then simply tell your story, including as much specific detail as you can remember. We will review your information and assist you in preparing your affidavit if necessary, and we'll provide this legal service for free. If you require further assistance, please don't hesitate to contact us either by phone or email, and we will be happy to assist you and accommodate you in making this task as easy as possible for you. What can we do to support this effort? Please share this information far and wide with everyone and anyone who may have been violated. For more information, contact 561-747-8496 or 850-417-8543. Or go to our website at electionfraudremedy.com. Thank you for your support. We salute all true patriots who are willing to defend liberty and justice by taking a stand to protect our civil rights in this urgent time of critical need.
Okay, folks. Yeah, Kelly, I got somebody he had to go, but he left some questions. Maybe you can he has actually left the chat, but he did ask some questions about the other audience would ask. And here's one, if you could talk something about voting machines or the central limit theorem or the Soros-affiliated companies in Spain owning the electronic voting machines.
Well, I'll tell you what we have done. It's one thing to write a book, it's another to get into action. What we have done this election season, the primary season, I wrote a complaint after compiling a bunch of evidence and problems seen. And I submitted one to my own county civil grand jury, but they were probably believing that Romney was the only one left, so they didn't really bother with it. But we've had over 500 complaints downloaded nationwide, and we're asking the grand juries to do a duplicate ballot. When you walk into the precinct, you're handed a piece of paper. What's this? You're going to vote twice. You circle the candidate you want, put it in the lockbox. That lockbox goes to the grand jury, and they're going to count what they have and compare it to the electronic voting machine. They'll vote your normal way. it's a duplicate ballot. And we haven't heard anything back as far as any big news story. What I'm suspecting is that district attorneys are saying things like, well, there's no evidence in this county for this election of election fraud rigging. Well, you dummy, how are you going to find it if you don't do it now? Yeah, it's other possible scenarios are that the grand jury has found fraud and the judge and the DA has asked them to be quiet until the criminals are in jail. So we don't know what the result's going to be, but we've also, this is the first time doing this, and so we kind of learned some things while we wanted to do it for the general election. And I'm involved with Watch the Vote 2012 on Facebook. It's a really good group. They're also helping with the Watch the Vote 2012.
Watch the Vote 2012?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
And my concern is not just Ron Paul. It's just like, look, had there been other riggings, what about Santorum or what about Gingrich? They may have done better than what we imagine in other states. Gingrich had a victory in Georgia and South Carolina, but maybe he did win more. But are these elections rigged? And that's, the attorney on the case basically says, this is similar to an organized criminal racket, like the mafia. I mean, that's mm-hmm. basically what he told WorldNet Daily. And so that was one thing, and I wanted, there is some more evidence coming in that you know, basically the GOP has picked Romney from the very beginning. My heart would not allow my mind to believe this. But as the evidence and the other things I've seen keep pouring in, I've come to the same conclusion, and it's kind of spooky. But what I mm-hmm. would hope that we could do is ask grand juries, especially after this lawsuit, the grand jury start counting the votes over. They can do that quickly. Now, they don't have to listen to opposing arguments. They can just issue this subpoena, get a hold of the ballots, and start counting. And really, that lawsuit is not just for Ron Paul folk. It's also for the Gingrich and the Santorum delegates
right.
that are going to the National Convention. They have the right under federal law to go ahead and vote their conscience. And I was talking
right.
to somebody from Arizona, and we're going to talk tomorrow because what's happened there. Oh, by the way, first of all, I want to read to you. You were talking about Vincent Rita, New York.
Right,
this
right.
42 U.S.C. 1971 Voting Rights is the heading. Subsection B, intimidation, threats, or coercion. No person, whether acting under color of law or otherwise, shall intimidate, threaten, coerce, or attempt to intimidate, threaten, or coerce any other person
right.
with the purpose of interfering with the right of such person to vote or to vote as he may choose, or of causing such other person to vote for or not to vote for any candidate.
Exactly.
For the office of president, vice president, member of the Senate, House, representatives, delegates, commissioners, and any general, special, or primary election. Do you think this statute clearly defines that Vincent Rita broke the law?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, what some people are looking for is someone from New York to actually call in and corroborate the that clip, because that audio clip. But I've got a person on hold. They've been waiting for a couple minutes. That they have a question for you, so let me go ahead and let them in so they can ask it. Okay, and then if we have time, I really would like to talk more about what you brought up about the Vincent Rita. That's something I've been on for a long time, but I don't want to keep them on hold too long.
Okay.
Well, that's
hello,
okay.
914.
That's
Lisa?
Okay. Hi, Robert.
Lisa. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Hi, Kelly. Thank you very much for a very informative show. Actually, you brought up something near and dear to me because that's exactly what I was going to bring up. And you've been on Sammy's show too, Kelly?
Yeah, but I didn't talk about the grand jury, more so about the brokered convention and how it's. Gingrich people, Ron Paul folk, we're working together.
Right, I was on that show, and I didn't realize that you were the same guest till some of the things that you said. And I think it was me who brought up Vince Rita, because I'm in New York.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right. You started discussing what I wanted to bring up right before I had the chance to about Vince Rader. But I did call up the Board of Elections, and they said they had other complaints about it. But what is the recourse?
Well, of course, you can get a grand jury complaint together.
The problem is I wasn't a personal witness to it.
Well, the grand jury can listen to hearsay. They can issue a subpoena based on hearsay. A person can take a video that Robert played earlier, type it, because when you transcribe an actual video or audio, they want to see it in paper, and send them both on a CD and get it to a grand jury, either county or, I don't know if New York has a state grand jury, half of them do. Arizona does. California does not have a state grand jury. But you can submit it there. The DA might poo-poo it and not do anything about it. Then you go to a judge. You can go right to a judge. You have to look up the codes. California, the judge shall convene a grand jury when in the best interest of the public. That might not could, but shall. So you can go to a judge if the DA ignores you. If you know somebody on the grand jury, or you know where they meet, there's some other tricks you can hand it right to them. It depends on your state, though. In Texas, you can hand a grand jury complaint directly to a grand jury member, and they are mandated by state statute to investigate. So that's another approach. I think it'd be good to get in touch with you some more. Robert, is she a regular caller that you can get me in touch with her?
Yes, she is,
definitely.
Okay, I can't remember your first name.
That's okay, I'm Lisa.
Lisa, okay, good. Well, yeah, I'll try to get in touch with you somehow.
Yeah, because I was searching all over, I was tweeting it out. Did anybody get this message? You know, but it depends if you target the right audience. Rockland County happens to be it has a very high population of Orthodox Jews. The Orthodox Jews tend to be more conservative. You know, when they do a lot of these polls, it's usually, polls can be so skewed. Although there are a lot of liberal Jews, but not amongst the most observant.
Huh, okay.
And I think that they, you know, knowing that Rockland County happens to have a lot of conservative Jews that I doubt very much would have voted for Obama, or would vote for Romney. And this message went out saying that all the other candidates, and I was, you know, grassroots volunteer for Gingrich's campaign. And so I knew for a fact that he had not even suspended his campaign yet. And this was going out before, about a day or two before the primary, saying that all the other candidates had dropped out of the race, but still go out to vote and show your support for Romney anyway, show the GOP that you unite behind our candidate, Mitt Romney.
Well,
and, of course, New York had a 78% lower turnout than we've had. I just went to vote at my primaries yesterday. It was disgusting. I was the only person there. They're not even putting it in the newspapers anymore. You would think it should be front page news, at least in the local news, that they're having a primary. They didn't even know there were congressional primaries yesterday.
Gosh, wow. Well, Lisa, I bet you felt really frustrated and angry that Vincent Rita pulled a fast one so that people wouldn't vote for your candidate, Gingrich. I mean, that's got to be frustrating.
Especially when you're on the ground floor, you know, and you know. And everyone I spoke to, because, you know, you try to influence.
Ron Paul was still actively campaigning.
Right.
So
exactly.
It definitely affected him as well.
And the fact, not to mention the fact that even if Santorum also, who had suspended his campaign, he was still on the ballot. And everyone I spoke to in New York who was a Republican And I know a lot of Democrats, too, who don't, but they couldn't vote in New York. You can't. There are several issues I have, as a matter of fact, which is something else maybe I'll bring up. But they didn't know that they had any other option, and I didn't talk to I might have talked to maybe one or two people that were going for Romney, but almost everyone I spoke to were going for Romney because they were totally duped by the media. Because, you know, a lot of the conservatives are older, just like me. I mean, I'm still a registered Democrat, which is stupid. I should have changed because I wasn't thinking I couldn't vote yesterday. I wrote in my own name on the Democratic ballot. But 2020 hindsight, I wasn't thinking clearly. I didn't change fast enough. But, they did not know that there was any other alternative. And most of the conservatives, like I said, like me, who's now a reformed Democrat, are not computer savvy. You know, the only place that they get their information is from the mainstream media.
Yeah. Wow. And, well, I know the class action lawsuit does have some people from New York. The question is, are we having more? Because we are looking for plaintiffs. A situation like this, the attorney will tell you, basically, you have been damaged. And to get delegates into the national convention, you have been damaged. You have a claim, and you're violating, your voting rights have been violated by Vincent Rita. And so, Gingrich, Santorum, Ron Paul, it doesn't matter. When there's a dirty game, it doesn't matter who you work for if it doesn't count. So, I'll get in touch with some of the people there I know and see if, and I'll get your contact information and see if, right, if you want to help us to find some of these injured parties and become plaintiffs. So,
another issue, I'm not sure if you...
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is in your expertise, but something that's really struck me, and I don't know why there hasn't been more of an outcry about it, is there are so many primaries held on Saturdays. Now, I know the Jewish population isn't a large population, but those who would be conservative can't vote on Saturday. Because most observant Jews, Orthodox Jews, they can't push a button. They can't use electricity. They can't
respect the Sabbath,
Are all these primaries on Saturday?
Well, here's something interesting relating to this. In Clark County, Nevada, that's basically Las Vegas, there were special caucuses held after sunset. So the Sabbath was over for Orthodox Jews and others.
I remember that, and I think they did that. Did they do that in Brooklyn for Bob Turner? No, I think that might have been on a Tuesday, but I remember hearing something about that.
Yeah.
And it struck me because there have been so many primaries on Saturdays, it just completely eliminates them. That's why you're getting all these skewed polls that they only poll the secular Jews who know nothing. Their religion is really liberalism, not Judaism.
Yeah.
And
What happened in that poll, or when in that caucus, CNN was there live, obviously live cameras, live accountability, you can't cheat. Ron Paul beat Romney 3-1. And you're going to tell me the rest of the state went for Romney? I mean, what's going on here?
There is definite fraud. There is no question in my mind.
Yeah, Massachusetts, the state chair says, we are going to count provisional ballots. Some people who have been registered Republicans for decades, all of a sudden they show up and they're a provisional ballot. So what? My precinct, I haven't moved nothing, and you're giving me a provisional ballot. And then they pulled the trick. Well, we're not counting provisional ballots now. What? This is out of control, and I could go off for hours, but it's just something we got to do. I do want to move on quickly because I do want to get in contact with you, and there's something we can do with Vincent Rita. At least get him on the federal suit, and then if we can use grand juries, that would be great. Especially a special federal grand jury in Rita's case, because he clearly violated the law. All right. What's going on with the class action suit? We're over 220, maybe as much as 300 plaintiffs in the case. Probably around, 18, but there might be as many as 20, 25 states that have joined this. And, of course, We're inviting Santorum, Gingrich. A lot of the people just don't like Romney, but we're getting a lot of unity together. It's beautiful. But here's another thing people are doing is they're submitting illegal suits and legal complaints, not necessarily to the grand juries, but to the Attorney General's Office of States. There's federal cases and there's state cases. Here's a letter from the Office of Attorney General, Arizona. A letter just came in a couple days ago to one of the plaintiffs that also filed a complaint with the state attorney general. And it's from Tom, it's actually Assistant Attorney General Michael Forney. And it's regarding the complaint of irregularities, 2012 Arizona Republican Party Convention. Dear Ms. Draper, I have reviewed your letter and the attached affidavits that you presented me with on June 13th. As I understand it, you and your colleagues have alleged that various procedures were not followed by those in charge of the 2012 Arizona Republican Party Convention, and that as a result, the election results for the delegates are inaccurate. This is where he's now. He's going to go into where I'm not taking up the case as the Attorney General. He writes further, the internal procedures of the Republican Party are not a matter for state oversight or investigation. Our office declines to investigate these allegations. Attorney General is not going to investigate violations of federal law, and I'm guessing with a 99% probability Arizona has the same laws on the books assuring voter rights and voter fraud, but he's not going to do anything about it. Interesting. So I've been on Facebook chat a little bit, and the poor lady, she's pretty tired, so she'll get back with me tomorrow. But I'm going to help her prepare a complaint to an Arizona state grand jury. Now, of course, the Attorney General's office won't do it, so we're going to go to an Arizona judge and say, look, we got problems. We want the grand jury, and there's several reports that Ron Paul actually won Arizona, not Romney. They were flip-flopped. But we're going to go to a state judge and say, we want this in the hands of the state grand jury. We want the state grand jury to subpoena the Republican convention and their ballots. We want to subpoena sample ballots of large precincts and see what you have on the paper ballots compared to the electronic results. And luckily, there's a Supreme Court justice that says, you know, it's the duty of the grand jury to investigate possible public offenses, including corrupt or willful misconduct in office by public officials. And obviously, it's not just public officials. It's, you know, when there's been laws violated, they can investigate private officials. So hopefully we'll get that submitted in the next week or so and just see what happens. If it's proven when they recount the ballots that the results have been flip-flopped, it's going to be a mess.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought the show.
No, we're still here, Lisa. Lisa's finishing his point, and I actually had a question. And well, by golly, I forgot what it was. I was talking to somebody in chat. It looks like there was some people to they were having some problems getting in tonight. So it sounds like there might be some. Some technical difficulties that I got to talk to some designers about. So that, you know, we don't continue with those. I know there's networking, things that we're working on. So, and I say things because I really can't describe it because, you know, my IT knowledge is not very good. I'm not very knowledgeable on that. So, I'll let that to the people who do. You definitely guys did bring up the New York, and actually now I remember. Are you familiar, Kelly, with a gentleman named Dan Melvin?
No, I'm not.
Okay, and I think he was a delegate, or he tried to be a delegate, and either he told a story or someone else did. It could have been him, it could have been someone else. I'm not sure. But So, I mean, so I could be having the source totally wrong, so I want to put that disclaimer out there before I say this, is that he said, or someone said, but I want to attribute it to Dan Melvin, but I could be incorrect, okay? So that someone said, I at least know what someone said this, is that they're actually out of one of the state conventions or some kind of meeting for the state convention, and they were asking them, well, who are you going to support? Who are you going to support? They kept asking who the people are going to support. And basically, if you wouldn't tell them who you're going to support, you know, and these guys are Romneyites, that's what I call them, Romneyites or Romby zombies. And, I say Romney zombies, cause it's like they, you know, drink the Kool-Aid, and then they're like, Romney, you know, without doing any thinking, you know, about what it means, what supporting Romney really means, especially for the Republican Party and even America. But, you know, but it sounded like what these people were doing, these were, Romney zombies, you know, they were, you know, for Romney. And if these guys didn't say who they were for, they kind of outed them. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, these guys, they're not telling us who they're going to support, or if they, you know, were to support someone other than Romney, then they wouldn't give them very much floor time to talk and say their piece. They'd only give them, like, 3 seconds, and by the time you could actually walk into the podium, your 3 seconds were gone before you even got there. Like, okay, next person. I mean, that's my take on it. I mean,
weren't the delegates coerced from New York?
Accurate. I'm sorry?
Weren't the delegates coerced? I think it was in New York, coerced with Donald Trump at some kind of a dinner with Donald Trump and Romney, where they called them into a separate room, and only those delegates who signed their pledge to him, a commitment to him, were able to meet with him and talk with him.
Oh, you're talking about he wanted them to he wanted the delegates to sign the support pledge for him.
That was in Nevada.
What also happened in Massachusetts too. Ron Paul got 17 of the 19 delegates, and the state GOP sent him a letter saying, you're going to sign this affidavit or you're not going to the national convention. And the affidavit said, I'm voting for Romney under penalty of perjury. That is exact violations why the lawsuit happened in multiple other instances all over the country. That basically, it's a violation of USC 42, 1971B. You cannot coerce people like this.
Yeah, Kelly, no, so I had Dan Melvin on my mind. I almost called you Dan.
Yeah.
But I have contact information for Lisa, so if you're interested in it after the show, if you could give me a call for a few minutes, and then I could give you her contact information.
Well, yeah, that'd be great. I've got to get over to another conference call. I'll call you probably later tonight or tomorrow. But we want to protect people's rights to vote at the national convention. If you want to vote, if you're a Gingrich fan and you want to vote for Santorum for Romney, if you're Romney, you want to go for Ron Paul, whatever, you're free to choose your conscience. It's in federal law. We all need this protection. We have to show the GOP we're not going to play these games anymore. We're not going to allow you to cheat the American people out of a true vote. And so hopefully we will prevail. In fact, here's another goodie that's about to happen. The Georgia state chair told a Ron Paul plaintiff on the case, you will get off this case or you're not going to Florida to the national convention. And there was an ex parte hearing yesterday, and it may be again today. And if the federal judge, if there's enough evidence, that Georgia chairman is going to go to jail. I mean, this is how bad it's gotten. I mean, why are we doing this? Why are we not just simply respecting the will of the American people? So,
what they're doing is, I think, you know, and I even think, you know, that pretty much almost the entire primary process, you know, this whole time, I was under the thought that, you know, up to a certain point, the primary was valid. You know, the results were valid in the beginning, but now I'm starting to wonder if the whole primary process this time around was just a sham. The whole of it.
I have not met one person personally who is passionate about Romney. I mean, come on, this is America. We invented the computer. We invented, you know, the first man on the moon, the telephone, the telegraph, yada, 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 okay? And all we get is Romney? Come on, this is America. And no one is, I know personally, is passionate about him. I know Gingrich people, they're passionate about him. I know Santorum, and I know Ron Paul people. Romney? I just don't know anybody passionate about him. What's going on here?
Right. Well, and you know what, and you know what, Kelly, is that that's going to, I mean, if Romney does indeed become the nominee, let me tell you, that lack of passion for Romney is going to, you know, it's going to rear its ugly head, okay, and it's going to really show itself, and the lack of support of boots on the ground, donations to his campaign, to lack of Romney signs in the yard, you know, I mean, the support's not going to be there. I mean, you know, look at the other, you know, when you look at McCain's campaign, you know, and you look at Bob Dole, I mean, those, they just weren't exciting, you know, exciting
right.
tickets,
right.
you know, the way, and you need something that's going to excite the pot, you know, the electorate, and, you know, McCain didn't either, you know, I think
Sarah Palin, yeah, Sarah Palin really
right.
helped him, but.
Right, but it wasn't enough, you know, to bring him over. And that's what they were hoping for. Because through my understanding, originally they were thinking about Rob Portman to be McCain's running mate. But I guess they felt that Palin would maybe bring more excitement, you know, to the ticket. And then for a while it did. But then through my understanding, they pretty much tied her hands. There was a lot of things she wanted to do in the campaign. And the McCain campaign were like, no, because that's not how we're handling things.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know. But then you know, they're going to, you know, they could possibly do it again.
Yeah, I'm scratching my head. There's a video about the Romney rallies, and you know, it looks like a packed room. But oh, wait a minute! You pull the cameras back, and it's maybe 100, 200 people. People just aren't showing up. Of course, the Ron Paul rallies had just packed out 10,000 UCLA. Other places on short notice, you know, and he's, but Romney's got the nomination, yes, the presumptive nomination, and Obama even congratulated him. It's like, come on.
Well, of course Obama congratulated him because, I mean, Obama wants to go up against Mitt Romney. You know, that's
yeah,
why,
you
I mean,
got a point.
Yeah, he wants to. But see, you know, you're already starting to see a few negative ads from the Obama campaign against Romney. And one of the reasons why I think you're seeing that now is because one of the things I'm contending is that, you know, Romney's going to really be vetted by the Obama campaign after the convention. And the reason why you're seeing a few negative ads here and there now is because what the Obama campaign is trying to do is play into the narrative that, you know, Romney is indeed, you know, the official nominee, which that doesn't that's not going to happen until after the convention. But they're trying to play into that narrative to get more people thinking, oh, yeah, it's a Romney, you know, to keep thinking, you know, it's a Romney-Obama race, you know. But it's not, but, I mean, he's invested in Romney being his opponent because he will be the easiest one for Obama to beat.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the same thinking why Jimmy Carter just loves Obama, because then Jimmy Carter won't be the worst American president in American
exactly.
history.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So.
That is so true.
Yeah. Yeah, I just hope we can get a true vote. You know, I want to see what happens with the suit. Let's see if the grand jury can do some more things, reopen, but get a hold of paper ballots, compare them to the machines.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stories I can tell you, but I don't want to go into it, as we might be out of time, but, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, yeah, I've only got about 5 minutes left, and so, you know, I'll start to wind things down here. But first, you know, I'd like to thank you very much for coming in tonight and talking with us about the book and about the lawsuit. And, you know, I'd really like to have you back sometime to speak with us. And I'd like to give this opportunity again for you. If you want to plug where they can find your book and plug your website real quick, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just Hidden Fourth Branch, the number 4TH, hiddenfourthbranch.com, or the same on Amazon. And it's, you know, there's something that I did want to plug more than just, you know, oh, buy the book. No, I wanted to plug just the fact that when Americans are ready to act, you know, by getting the book, that's the best way to get ready to act, and more corrupt scenarios come forward, then we can have an army of people ready to go. Oh, what I'm finding is I'm having to explain this power to people, and I'm just getting a little exhausted. I don't mind doing it, but I'm trying to multiply my efforts, and the best way to be ready when the next corrupt scenario comes along is to simply get the book and read it, you know, share it with a friend, give it to a friend, get double the mileage for the same price. But, you know, whatever it takes for America to get free, we just have to be ready.
Well, I know, Kelly, that, you know, we're working on increasing a network, and that network is, you know, we dub it the conservative conversation. But as per our conversation earlier today, you know, that if you fall into three categories, okay, one of three categories, okay, you don't have to fit all three of them. You know, you could fit
right.
Just one of the three, you know, then...
the three C's,
you know,
like we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. And one thing is, you know, I mean, you know, we're building a network, and, you know, if you'd like to, you know, come apart and be a part of our network, I mean, you know, that would be great. And I think that what you have here is going to be an invaluable source, or a very valuable source, you know, to get out to the public. And that's what we want to do, is we want to educate the public, because they don't know. And
yeah.
Once they do get this power, we can get rid of the corruption and actually have some politicians, you know, that we can, you know, start to trust and believe in.
Oh, that would be a great goal. And, yeah, I'm definitely I'm up for joining your group. The three C's, you probably mentioned it, was a conservative, constitutionalist, or number three would be Christian. The three
mm-hmm.
C's that you're looking for.
Right. It's, it's easy to remember. You know, but, I mean, and within, you know, those groups, you know, you have Lisa, who, you know, I believe is an Orthodox Jew, correct, Lisa?
Yes.
Yes. You know, we're a very diverse group. You know, she's been very involved, and she brings in a gentleman, and what's his name? Rabbi Levin?
Oh, Rabbi Levin, right.
Levin, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's got a lot of great things to say. I've heard him. Talk, and you know, we'd like to, you know, get him on board, and because we do have a commonality. Now, we do have our differences. That, you know, we do have our differences in some stances, but we do have a lot of in common. So, but anyway, I'd like to take this time, because I've only got a couple minutes here, to thank everyone who came into the show to listen tonight. I strongly urge you take a look at Kelly Mordecai's book. And his website, you know, you check it out. And thank you, Lisa, for calling. And
thank you, and thank you, Kelly.
Okay, well, as I like to do with my nights, the way I like to end it, is I'm going to put, I won't be able to play the whole song, but it's a really pretty song I like to play, and then I'll put a link to her her website. I'm not affiliated with her in any way, just I really like her music. So good night, everyone. Take care, and I hope to talk to you later. And then if you'd like to call me later tonight, you know, Kelly, or just call me tomorrow for contact information for Lisa, then I look forward to speaking with you.
Well, yeah, thanks. I really enjoyed being on with you, Robert.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed the conversation. And everyone, take care.
You too.
All right, good night, all.
Good night.